This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Joe Madden and Theo Epstein seem to have different versions of the events that led to Madden's departure. Whose version rings truest to you, and can both versions be true?
You know, I think we can all believe things, even if they're not necessarily true. I think we can convince ourselves of facts, not in evidence. I think that we see that a lot in our political landscape. I think that people can talk about something and remember it in a way that is flattering to them, maybe. I think that Theo's version of events ring truer to me. I think that they got rid of Joe Madden, and I don't believe it was Joe that didn't want to come back. I think Joe wanted to come back. I think that the idea that there was interference, that he wasn't allowed to do things the way that he wanted to, I would imagine there was a level of truth to that, because you saw things fall off. And I just think maybe they had a conversation about batting practice. Hey, you know, you really need batting practice. Like, guys aren't hitting, something like that. I don't know that Joe doesn't believe that it ran its course and it was time to go. But I do believe that that he feels that way now, when he looks back on it. So I don't know that he was living that in the moment, but I think that he probably felt that he wasn't wanted, and that made him feel like maybe he didn't want to be here. But of the two, I think Theo probably captured more of the essence of what actually happened.
More plausible to believe. Look, Theo took the high road in addressing some of the things that came out in that story. And I wish that Joe Madden had stayed on it. And I think it was a surprise, really, to see that Joe would talk about Chicago and his time here with the sense of regret of the way things ended. Because I think if they had offered him a contract extension a year ago at this time, he would have accepted it. And I think that had they offered it at any point during the season, he might have accepted it. He had a restaurant. He had a place that is going to be in Cubs history forever. He'll be a hero. He's a legend. And when he comes back, he will get cheered, regardless of what happens with the fallout to these comments. He complained that in the story, or at least pointed out that after the 2018 season, things changed. So essentially, when he's suggesting that when they wanted to instill more structure, he kind of pushed back at that, or did not want that. That wasn't him. However it went down, and whatever the fallout was, if there truly was nothing to lament about his 5 seasons in Chicago, as he pointed out in the story, stop lamenting. Because if there was no way, nothing to complain about, there's nothing to see here. So move on quietly, with dignity, and look back fondly at a 5-year period in Cubs history that, as he pointed out in the story, was the best 5-year period the Cubs have ever enjoyed. So I think what happened was that sometimes in Chicago, Joe was sort of criticized, or people rolled their eyes in the clubhouse when Joe went on about Joe. And I think the longer this interview went on with the ESPN reporter, Joe was talking about Joe. And it's certainly some things got kind of glossed over. It's unfortunate, but I would be more likely to believe it went down the way Theo described it yesterday.
Yeah, Joe does love him some Joe, doesn't he? He can go on and on. And I like Joe. You know, he's very magnanimous, eloquent guy, and we all have varying degrees of memories about Joe and what he accomplished here, and he did accomplish a lot. But I mean, if you're telling me I have to choose between these two versions of events, which are not, I don't think they can both be true. I don't think that Joe can say now, oh, I was going to leave anyway. I was going to leave the whole time. I was on my way out. It just ran its course, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas during August and September and basically all season of the 2019 Cubs, because it was such a huge topic, because Joe being a lame duck, and he was asked constantly, and he's like, oh, I'd love to come back. I'd love to come back. And now all of a sudden, it's a little bit of sour grapes to me. I don't know that had he been offered a contract extension, I'm sure he would have taken it. I agree with you there. I think that, you know, the restaurant or you know, his tenure here, his comfort, his knowledge of the players and his relationships with a lot of these guys, I think that had Theo wanted to bring him back, Joe would still be here. Whether it was a financial thing, whether it was a control thing, a philosophical thing, it's probably a measure of all of those things kind of strewed together. But I think if I have to choose between he said here, I'll take Theo's version as canon.
Don't you remember that when people brought up the philosophical differences in September, he said that was way off base? And
he flat out said it was not true. There was no philosophical difference. And then he used the term philosophical differences.
It's just too many contradictions here. And yeah.
A lot of contradictions, and the issue here is that you get into we are dissecting a game of telephone here. The event happened. The two parties went their separate ways, Epstein and Madden, and everybody got in their head and maybe conveniently remember things the way they do that best suits them. I think that's what we're dealing with here. I think maybe both can be a little bit true. I'd like to say that I would lean more towards Madden's side of things, and here's why. What does Joe Madden have to gain by all of this? Nothing. He's moved on to another team, whereas Theo Epstein is still with the Cubs and still has to spin the narrative surrounding this team. So I would tend to lean towards Joe Madden's version of events. However, as you guys all pointed out, the level of contradiction between these two and everything is just kind of crazy. I can believe that maybe Madden thought as things were changing in terms of like how he had to handle the team and he was being told how to manage, that maybe he felt like, yeah, you know, this isn't the place for me, and then had a change of heart at the end of the season and tried to see if things can be worked out and he can stay with and remain the manager of the Cubs. I can believe that. I'm going to say I think both versions are true because of the game of telephone.
I think Joe Madden's is more clear. I think both versions are true. You know, to everybody's point, Madden is now not here, so he can be a little more direct and a little more clear on what was happening. This has been going on. That was going on all last year. We talked about it a lot. We had lots of people saying, you don't know what you're talking about. Where do you come up with this stuff? This was ugly. All this lineup Easter stuff was going on, and it had somebody red-assed. It actually had many people red-assed. Okay.
So you're saying that Theo and Jed became lineup Eastas?
Absolutely, they did. And that's why Joe Madden's no longer here. Okay. But the idea that he didn't want to be here, okay, that's where I call BS on Joe Madden. You don't open up a restaurant. You don't do the things you did. Okay. And that's also where I call BS on Theo and Jed. Okay. Listen, you basically threw away that year then. Okay. And then you spent the money you spent on Kimbrel. Okay, you should have gotten rid of Joe Madden at the All-Star game. You should have brought David Ross out of the booth at the All-Star game. Okay, that's what should have been done. So it's shame on it. It's just shame on everybody right this second. This has like the Bulls kind of written all over it, where organizations win championships, not individuals. Right? Like they assembled. Theo did a fantastic job of assembling an unbelievable talent. And then he said, oh, there's the perfect guy to get the talent going in the direction we need in Joe Madden. And then the egos got too big, and all of a sudden you needed to break it up. And now we've got the Chris Bryant thing still hanging there, that it might happen, that he might be gone. It just reminds me of that dynasty, except for the fact that the Cubs only won once.
How's that Bulls organization doing with their winning championship?
Organization. Hey, listen, they're still worth $3.2 billion, so I'm sure everybody's...
Somebody's happy.
I'm sure everybody's sleeping well at night.
And I'm happy you're asking these questions.
Has Joe Maddon given his final say on his feelings about his departure from Chicago? Are we at the end of this story, or is it merely just the beginning? And if you're an Angels fan, do you care about any of this stuff?
I don't think you care if you're an Angels fan at all. I think that they're probably very, you know, can be amused by it because it has nothing to do with the Anaheim Angels. I don't think we have heard the end of it, and I don't know that I don't think it behooves Joe Maddon from continuing this, but I think he should be asked about it. And if the Angels have their first workout today, I know that'd be the place that I would want to be. In Arizona, I as much as if you could be at two places at once, if the Sox open camp. But I'm curious to see how Joe Maddon responds, even though he will be kind of downplaying everything. He will want to say that it was a big deal about nothing and it was out of context. And he was sitting there reflecting at his coffee shop in Southern California and just kind of feeling the vibes, man. And just everything was going, you know, he just got carried away. I just don't know that he's going to stop talking because we love Joe Maddon because he never stops talking and he's a fascinating guy. In this case, though, I don't know that there's anything more to be gained from him kind of rehashing the way things ended in Chicago. But I don't think we've heard the end of this. In some odd way, this could end up helping David Ross. I mean, anything that makes people wonder about whether or not Joe Maddon, you know, Dustin's already suggesting that maybe they would have been better off getting rid of him at midseason. And that's a valid conversation piece. I think it's a good point. Maybe it helps in the big picture David Ross be accepted quicker and be given the benefit of the doubt because at least he's not Joe Maddon.
I talked to a friend of ours, David, that shall go unmentioned, but is not a Joe Maddon fan. And I said to him basically what Ray said. Well, what does Joe have to gain from all this? And his response, I thought, was really interesting because his response was effectively attention. Joe Maddon has gone to an organization where they are the second story in town mm-hmm. by a mile. He is now basically in a place where everyone wants to talk about the Dodgers and look at the Dodgers outfield and, wow, they've got all these MVPs. And Joe has no corner on the story. And Joe has a couple of good players, a couple of great players, but he does not have a very good team, and he certainly doesn't have pitching that you would think you'd need in order to make an impact. So for Joe to make an impact, for Joe to get attention, he needs to talk about his previous employer. He needs to talk about his time in Chicago. I would imagine that the subject will come up repeatedly, and Joe will be delighted to speak of it every time it does. So I think this is just the beginning of the story, and I think that we're going to learn more things moving forward.
Can I get you another glass of wine?
Well, there you go. Once that gets going, too, forget it. But Joe does like himself some Joe, as Kempo said earlier, and I think it is not beyond the pale that he will go about talking about other issues with this and different things. And if I'm an Angels fan, I would get tired of hearing any of it. I would not want some guy coming in and talking about his old team and not his new team. I would like to hear more about the Angels were I an Angels fan. So I think that could run tired and run old. And, you know, I like Joe. He keeps saying the same thing about this idea that in Chicago time moves differently. I find that a fascinating idea and one worth talking about later in the show.
You know who else said that? Lou Piniella.
Yes, he did. We get him on then. Is that it?
You know, you never want to go on a first date and start a new relationship with a girl and talk about your ex-girlfriend the entire time. That's a huge turnoff. And I think you're right, Mully. If you are an Angels fan... And I don't know any personally, but if you're an Angels fan...
You must have one.
There have to be. I've seen plenty of people at the stadium at one time or another. So there have to be Angels fans out there. And I'm sure over in Anaheim and on the West Coast, there are plenty. But if you are an Angels fan, you don't really want to hear this. Luckily, it's February 12th right now, and there's, you know, it's long spring training, and maybe, I doubt this, but maybe Joe just needed to get everything off his chest and he'll leave it be and he can worry about the new Maddon's post he's going to open up in Southeast Anaheim at some point and Mike Trout and all of the and Ohtani and all of the good positive things that are happening with the Los Angeles Angels. If you're an Angels fan, that can be your hope. I mean, Joe's not going to come back to Chicago till August when the Angels come here to play the Sox. So that'll be the only time the Chicago media will probably get a crack at Joe and maybe be able to rehash all this stuff. God knows, you know, when the Sox go out to Anaheim, they're not going to send any White Sox beat writers there to talk to Joe. Of course, they're not going to, you know, foot the bill for that. So,
wow.
Hopefully, if you are an Angels fan, you don't care any about this. You don't care about any of this stuff at all, and you can kind of let it go. And if you're a White Sox fan, I know you don't care about any of this stuff as well.
No, this is not the end of this. Joe Maddon has not had his final say. As Kevin brings up, that August game in Chicago, albeit it's against the White Sox, I'm sure someone will ask about this because of Joe Maddon's return to Chicago. And guess what? Whenever this does die out, it's not the end of it, because once Joe Maddon retires, I'm sure he's going to have some sort of juicy tell-all book about his entire career, and there will be a very long and extensive chapter about his time in Chicago with the Cubs. And he will be, I'm sure, you know, giving more juicy details about, you know, the conflict with him and Theo. So no, it's not the end of it. Absolutely not. In terms of Angels fans, if you're an Angels fan, if you didn't have so many positive things the way they do, then I would be maybe a little concerned or something like that. But they have too many great things going on. If I'm an Angels fan, I care more about what Mike Trout's going to do this year, how Ohtani's elbow recovery is going. I don't give a damn about this.
This is just the molehill. The mountain is being built. This is not going away anytime soon. Now, it might get put on the back burner, but the story is far from over. Okay, this stuff. Because guess what's next? Okay, when they open up the clubhouse, okay, every single player is going to get asked about this. Every single player. Every single player that's on another team right now in another market, and that's where the juice might happen. Okay, what might Pedro Strop say about all of this? Okay, what if they can get to who do you think the coach is? Which coach? Sorry,
that's his guy, Stropey.
Well, we're gonna find. Okay. Which coach is gonna finally get to talk? Knows that his baseball career is over and is gonna say that Theo is the one that ran his backside out of town, right? When are we gonna find out which guy that was? Because it was somebody with the Cubs. Theo ended up not wanting to admit that, but ended up admitting that by saying, well, I guess Joe let that one out of the bag.
Well, yeah, I think that was an off-the-field thing he referenced, and I think we know that was Jim Hickey.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. But when will Jim Hickey have a cell phone or a microphone put in front of his face, and what are the stories going to be? Okay. Chris Bosio, okay, what are the stories going to be when a microphone, well... Okay, when that happens. So I don't know why we're talking about the Angels fans. I mean, are there any Angels fans? Do they actually exist?
Yeah,
the committee.
Supposedly have a generational player, like a top three player, not in currently baseball, of all time baseball, and you barely even know that it exists unless the Four Letter Network or MLB Network throws a highlight of him. The guy couldn't even suck it up enough to get to Chicago when he was here twice last year. So I give a damn about him or the Angels, and I don't eat trout.
Can I go back on vacation?
Please do.
You know, it's tough to be up here answering questions.
Well, the Cubs signing Jason Kipnis blocked Nico Horner at second base, and if that's true, is that a smart signing in a season the Cubs can't ignore the need to develop young players?
Oh, I don't think that this is about Nico Horner. I think this is more about Jason Kipnis and the fact that he's willing to sign a minor league deal because he wants to keep going, he wants to play for the hometown team, and yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think, you know, maybe this blocks Daniel Descalso. I don't know. I mean, I don't know whose place Kipnis eventually would take. They got a whole bunch of guys still lined up at second base, right? They still have all sorts of people with the opportunity to try to nail down that position, and Kipnis becomes the latest one. I don't know where they're at with Horner. I don't know if they want him immediately in that position or if they think he needs a little more time in the minor leagues. Played great when he came up in that sort of emergency situation last year, But I think that if you're in win now mode, then you're not interested in developing players. You're more, and if you're interested in developing players, maybe you do it at AAA. I don't know that he is necessarily locked into that spot. They seem like they have a lot of different options there, and I hope he has a good camp, and I hope he's the guy. But I don't think that Jason Kipnis is a guy that blocks him.
Kipnis is the perfect signing for a team that doesn't know what it wants to be this year. And the Cubs certainly have no idea. Are they going to be a team that contends? Well, yeah, maybe sort of. But if that's the case, then what were they doing in the offseason without making any trades to change a roster on an 84-win team? And then if they're a team that's going to go young, this doesn't really fit into that kind of idea either. So he's kind of stuck in the middle. He's not coming off a great year in Cleveland with 17 homers, 245. 304, 410 kind of slash line. Not ideal. Doesn't play any other positions, really. Only 25 games in the outfield throughout his career. Certainly a good guy to have in the clubhouse. We know the local ties. We know he's Steve Bartman's neighbor. We know all about the narrative of Jason Kipnis growing up in the Chicago area and why coming to Chicago makes sense for him to be a part of the Cubs. I just don't know how much sense it makes for the Cubs at a position where, as you point out, Molly, they have a lot of different options. They've got a lot of different guys, and maybe this helps with the platoon idea. I'm not sure, but I think it underscores just how uncertain so many things are about this season as we sit here on February 12th.
I think if Jason Kipnis is the opening day second baseman for the Cubs, that's a problem, and that's a really bad sign. He hasn't hit since, 2016. He's been a pretty poor offensive player for the past couple of seasons. He's had some injury issues. You mentioned defensively, he can play the outfield in a pinch, but really he is a second baseman by trade. Doesn't have a ton of versatility. And you know, speaking of versatility, you don't really know how this year's Cubs will be on that front in regard to David Ross's philosophy as a manager contrasted to Joe's, because you know Joe loves throwing guys around, playing Chris Bryan in left, center, and Contreras at right field, Javi everywhere else. I mean, does David Ross believe in that? So is that something else to consider when you look at the depth chart for the Cubs and how this is all going to turn out? But I think...
Yeah, Dustin's guy, Trout, more likely to play shortstop or second base than some of these guys.
Yeah, he's going to catch a little bit too as well.
Does he exist? Does he actually exist, or is he still making Subway commercials?
That's a free promo for Subway. They're a sponsor. I love Subway.
Eat fresh.
$3.79 right. Specials every day.
He's real and he's spectacular.
Let me know the next time you see him play, because his games start well past my bedtime.
You know, I don't know if they've given up on Ian Happ as a second baseman. Maybe he's strictly an outfielder now, but I think that would be the only other thing. Maybe is a guy with a little bit of potential left. I don't know how much, but you know, somebody that maybe can still strike on at some point. If Ian Happ is playing there, if they still think he can play at second base, or if it's Nico Horner, you'd be okay with that. But if it's Bodie or Kipnis or Descalso, that is a really bad sign and a bad start to the 2020 campaign for the Cubs second baseman.
Well, you have to hope that Nico Horner does break camp with the team. However, either way, I don't think Kipnis is going to block Horner's development whatsoever. I'm sure Horner will join the major league team at some point, if not at the beginning of the season. And you have to hope that Jason Kipnis, I mean, you're not asking for a lot. You have to hope that Jason Kipnis contributes more than what you've had last season at second base with Bodie and Descalso. At the very least, you look at the stats from last season for Kipnis: 17 home runs, 65 RBIs in 2019, as opposed to, let's see, Daniel Descalso, 2 home runs and 15 RBIs in 2019. Daniel Descalso, and I'm sorry, David, but David Bodie didn't give you a damn thing. You have to hope the veteran Jason Kipnis can come in and at least be serviceable and at least contribute to your offense.
Blasphemer.
I don't think he blocks him. I don't think that's the right word. Does he slow him down? No, it's kind of a matchup thing, right? Let's see who can hit who. Jason Kipnis is basically Ben Zobrist 2.0. That's what this is. Okay, let's see what happens. I mean, when Ben got here, he was better than Kipnis when Kipnis is here. Also, remember, Kipnis got a minor league deal Okay, if he's as bad at hitting as Kevin just mentioned, because, you know, we got these metrics, we got this Picota thing that we're going to slice and dice and get all our Kleenex and lotions
out.
Not
what I sound like.
Okay. Well, it was in my head when you were on vacation. You know, then we're going to find out. If he can't hit, then he won't be on the team. And then probably you'll have a platoon of Ian Happ and Nico Hoerner at second base.
It's a great question.
What is the biggest question the White Sox face as pitchers and catchers report today to Camelback Ranch?
Well, if I am wandering Camelback Ranch today and I'm watching White Sox report, and I know the full team doesn't get there till later, but most of the guys are there already. I'm curious what Michael Kopech looks like throwing the ball, how it's coming out of his hand, how fast his velocity is, all these kind of things surrounding him. I'm wondering about Zach Birdie, a guy who has been sort of not talked about a lot, but he has some potential still, kind of what he looks like as far as, you know, the new pitchers. Dallas Keuchel will get a lot of attention. The biggest question, though, I think big picture-wise for the Sox is still, can they play defense? You know, are they going to improve defensively to the point where, you know, you expect them to hit, you expect them to even pitch to a large degree, but can they catch the ball? Because that is their biggest weakness last year. When the full team gets there, obviously everybody's going to wonder, what does Luis Robert look like, and how does he develop? And also Nick Madrigal. So those are the guys that kind of piqued my curiosity the most as the White Sox get together.
Yeah, you know, I really don't like the way this is worded. I think we're looking for the biggest negative. I would prefer to look for the biggest storyline. I think storyline's a happier way of presenting it than question. It just seems as if we're desperately trying to find out what's wrong with the White Sox, when in reality, what we need to know is, what is the happiest storyline? It is the development of the young players, obviously. When you talk about questions, what's the question? How are they going to answer the question? Well, it comes down to pitching. How good is their pitching going to be? Because pitching really is their defense. They're not going to be a great defensive team. I don't think they're going to suddenly discover how to play great defense. I think they can play reasonable defense, and I think the pitching, it comes down to those questions. I find it fascinating that you start with Kopech. The big question with Kopech is control. Obviously, the guy's coming off Tommy John surgery. Zach Birdie also coming off Tommy John surgery, but a guy that did he not have a knee as he was coming back from that? So I don't think he's ready to go at all. I think that the issue with him is going to be velocity. I think he had lost some velocity when last we saw him. So those are guys that don't really, they don't start in the mix in my pitching world. I think that what we have to figure out with the White Sox pitching is if they're going to be able to take another step forward. Is Giolito going to be able to take another step? Is it just a question of renewing that? Where is Ronaldo Lopez? You put a lot of time into this. Is he going to be a guy that can be a reliable starter in the major leagues? Can he make a Giolito jump, if we can use that term? So I think they have questions. You know, Dylan Cease said at Sox Fest that he wants to be an all-star. That would be sensational. I think they all have questions. I'm very curious to see how the storyline of the catcher affecting the pitchers will play out. So how indeed does signing Yasmani Grandal, how does his framing work with these young pitchers, with these veteran guys that they've signed? How much of a jump do they get because they've signed this catcher? But really, you know, for me, I want to call it a question. I don't think it's a negative, but I want to know how quickly the young guys become the players that we hope they can be.
There are a lot of questions. Every team has questions, though. I mean, unless you're the Yankees or the Dodgers, every single team in Major League Baseball is facing one question or another. For me, you know, the development of players like Eloy, if you want to see him take another step, of course. You want to see Anderson and Moncada duplicate what they did and possibly get better. You want to see Grandal and the impact he'll have on the pitching staff. There are a lot of questions. For me, though, and if I do have to paint it negative here, and I guess I don't have to, I'm choosing to do so, the bullpen. Alex Colomé, I think, is solid enough. Aaron Bummer came on last season. It was excellent from the left-hand side. But you want to see what you have left in C-Sheck. You want to see if Herrera can bounce back. You've got, you know, Marshall and Cordero in the mix. Bullpens are weird. In a year-to-year basis, a guy that performed well might fall off the cliff 1 year, and vice versa. A guy that was terrible might come back and bounce back for you in the case of Herrera, potentially. So I'm going to be really looking at the bullpen, especially when you have a starting staff filled with younger guys, guys that will be on pitch limits, on inning limits, that are coming back from injuries that they're going to have to be watchful and mindful of. I think the bullpen is going to be really, really important, and it's a question for me.
Biggest question in my mind is Michael Kopech. We heard him right here on the Score with McNeil and Parkins talking about, his mental health and all of that. I mean, there's a lot of positive stuff that came out of his mouth. You know, he's in a good place mentally. How does he feel throwing the ball? How, the control, as you alluded to, Mully, that's the biggest thing for me. How does Michael Kopech look, and how soon before we see him with the Major League team?
I mean, I agree with the Kopech thing. I mean, he's lightning, right? He cut his hair, but he's still that, like, Herculean, potentially.
Thor cut his hair in the movies, too.
Right. I mean, I loved watching him pitch last year, okay? Or was that 2 years ago now? I can't even remember. 2 years ago now, right?
2 years, yeah.
He's sweating mayonnaise on the mound out at 35th and Shields and really throwing the ball like crazy. I'd like to see. But he's not the question right now, because that's still... That's not when they host a game on March 26th against the Royals. My question is, what's that lineup going to look like? Is Nick Madrigal, who's playing second base and who's leading off, and how does Ricky line them up? I mean, that's the question. I think Kevin makes a good point about the bullpen. You need to have a good bullpen in order to have the success that everybody's hoping that they have down there. But me, personally, and for what we do on this show, I mean, the lineup Easting that's going to be going on is going to be epic. Okay, they have so many guys, and it was so non-traditional. Tim Anderson won the batting crown last year from a non-traditional spot in the order, right? And he moved all over the place all year long. Is he going to settle in somewhere? And if that's up higher than he was last year, is that going to affect, can he only be that good at 6 or 7? And if
nothing wrong with batting him 7.
Well, I'm just saying, but I mean, in typical baseball, when's the last time a batting champion batted 6th or 7th, right? It's crazy. So to me, from a non-Sox fan's point of view, I'm very curious to see how they line. They have a wealth of riches. Their lineup right now, except maybe second base, where do you find the out in that lineup? So how do you exactly line them up? That's my question.
That is an unbelievably great question.
As both Chicago managers start their seasons in Arizona this week, who will have the most impact on his respective team, Rick Renteria or David Ross? And will the biggest impact come through making in-game decisions or creating a culture?
I love this, because I think with David Ross, it's about creating a culture. And with Rick Renteria, it's about making in-game decisions and decisions with the lineup before it starts. So I'm very curious to see if Ross can put a boot on guys, if the malaise that they were talking about is really something to do with the lack of motivation, and does a coach/manager motivator, is that the answer? Is that what this has been needed with the Cubs? Because again, they did not make any other real changes. They didn't really alter the talent level of the team. They didn't try to improve it. They feel like this guy will get more out of the people that are already there. I think with Ricky, it's a question of finding out if he's a manager and how good a manager he can be. I don't want to see a bunt. I don't want to see a bunt all damn year. I think that whoever wins the second base job, it's the only real position battle that we can talk about at this point. I think whoever wins it, be it Leury Garcia or Danny Mendick, I think that guy becomes the leadoff guy. When Madrigal comes up, I don't know who the leadoff guy is, because I think he becomes the bottom of the order guy. So I find it fascinating how each guy has something different. I think Ross is not about in-game. It's not about lineup. It's about culture change, and it's about getting players to max out their potential. So for the sake of this question, I'm going to say it's Rick Renteria, because I think he's actually the biggest question mark, bigger question.
Renteria has the opportunity to have the most impact because the Sox are younger and they're a team on the rise, and he is a manager that tends to be very good developing young players. And so we'll see that. And I think we'll evaluate him more, Dustin's exactly right, on his lineups, on his moves. more about how he structures the lineup and what that does to the development and what that gets out of guys more than we will maybe whether or not he's bunting. That'll always be there, but I think how he structures the lineup with the decisions he makes in the bullpen will determine kind of how much impact he has. As for Ross, this is an opportunity for him too, in terms of just the structure, the culture, and are the Cubs going to avoid those mental lapses that led to so many base running mistakes last year, defensive lapses? So that is his chance to show that, yeah, he can have an impact by just tightening things up a little bit with the Cubs.
Well, I think it should be David Ross, because why else do you change the manager if you don't think the new one will have a better positive impact and will make the team better? I want to see what David Ross, if he's more consistent, if he plays guys in the same position, if he's hitting Kyle Schwarber at leadoff despite the evidence that it doesn't work. We don't know anything about David Ross as a manager, what he's going to do. We already kind of know what Ricky Renteria's style is. I think David Ross has to be the more impactful hire here, because you got rid of a guy who won a World Series for a guy who was on Dancing with the Stars most recently.
It's David Ross because he's the new manager in town. He is tasked with creating a new culture for the shell of a championship team, or at least bringing back the culture that was in 2015 and 2016. It's all about David Ross.
Yeah, I've said that David Ross is the ass kicker that the Cubs have needed. We'll get on Ricky if things aren't going right, for sure. But for me, my eyes and ears will be all around David Ross and the Cubs.
312-644-6767. That's the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.